Welcome back, everyone, to the Chaos Ball Podcast. Thanks for tapping in again. A little bit of a different type of episode today. Less formal. Very much less formal than the past couple episodes. I took a look at the offense and the pitching staff the last two episodes. A little over 3 hours for those combined, which I thoroughly enjoyed delving into all the stats and numbers. But today, I'm sitting on my couch, and for circumstances somewhat out of my control, I'm recording this podcast during World Series Game 2. Tommy Edman just hit a home run. It's 1-0, Dodgers. And I'm going to just watch this while I record because I want to, and I don't have as much to focus on Mariners-wise, and this episode should likely be a shorter one. I'm just going to take a look at the arbitration cases for this team heading into November and just kind of figure out what I would do, what I think the team's going to do, because they have a lot of arbitration arms from the bullpen up for their first or second arbs right now, and there's plenty of non-tender candidates. I think there's plenty to talk about here, and then also just go over what like other guaranteed contracts they have. Thank you, MLB Trade Rumors, for this. I appreciate it. But how about game one? I mean, just to talk about World Series for a second. Good Lord, what a game. I feel like it was a perfect game of baseball. It had a little bit of offense. It had some dingers, which the Associated Press said that I can't say, but I'm still going to say it. I'm going to say dingers till I die. And it had extra innings. It had starters in relief. And then a walk-off grand slam at home in game one of the World Series. You can't get much more than that. Like, there were defensive errors. There was the really good base running. Like, it turned into a strategic battle. I mean, every game is technically a strategic battle, but you know what I mean. I mean, it had it all. And Joe Davis on the call, I think he absolutely nailed the walk-off. That was phenomenal. And really what was astounding is, like, Judge and Ohtani, couldn't remember that guy's name for a second, didn't have a whole lot of impact on the game. Like, Ohtani late in the game did help tie it up, right? He hit that double off Canely. And then advanced to third on an error from, I think they gave that an error on Gleyber, and then came home with a sacrifice fly, right? But Judge didn't do anything, and other than that, Ohtani was somewhat, I mean, that's a silent day for Ohtani. Like, the Yankees should be mad because they held Ohtani to not much, and yet they still lost in heartbreaking fashion. Like, Stanton hit another home run. He's been insane this postseason. Like, what I've gathered is, you know, Aaron Judge, not built for the bright lights. Guy sucks. Can't hack it in the playoffs, clearly. And, like, it's hard. It's going to be hard to top that game. Like, I don't know how these next few games are going to top that. I hope this goes 7. I really do. But I hope the Dodgers win. I'm not mad about the Dodgers winning. I can't ever bring myself to root for the Yankees to win anything. And it's not, I mean, a lot of people were looking at this World Series like, oh, worst possible matchup. Oh, strong disagree for a lot of reasons. Like, these are two of probably the two teams that are the richest, you know. Like, I mean, the Mets are there, but they don't have like the brand value as the Yankees and the Dodgers. The two richest teams, two super well-run teams, and two of historically the best teams in baseball. Yankees probably the best, and the Dodgers, there's cases to be made for, you know, obviously they're one of the best teams of all time. There's so much to root for in this series for a casual to just like root for good baseball, and you saw it in game one. I pity the people who didn't want to watch this World Series because they hated both teams. I think that is a really tough way to look at sports in general if your team doesn't make it or if you hate these teams. Even if you're a Guardians fan, I still think you can very much enjoy this team. And I think most people would hate watch the Yankees. Unless you're like a Giants fan or like maybe like a Padres fan. I think other than those two fan bases, I don't know who else would be actively rooting against the Dodgers here. And you have two historically New York franchises that were rivals for a while before the Dodgers came and went west. You have Aaron Judge and Shohei Ohtani, you have Juan Soto and Mookie Betts. It's the opposite of last season. Like, last season is probably going to be one of the more forgettable World Series of all time, I'd say. Like, in my lifetime, at least in the 21st century, like, I'll say that. 21st century. Very forgettable. I think no one was really getting up for Rangers D-backs. It was an entertaining series, but game one already blew every game of that series out of the water, in my opinion. So and I think you need, for the Yankees and the Dodgers to a lesser extent, for them to continue being like the Death Star of baseball, the Yankees specifically, but for them to play the heel, like, you want these big teams with illustrious histories to do. You want them to play the heel. It's really good for the sport. They need to win sometimes. So no matter what happens, this is phenomenal for baseball, because either the Dodgers win and then there's even more of a target on their back for how good they've been this century, or the Yankees win and they haven't won since 2009 and they get their 28th ring, and then there's like kind of renewed hatred because they're a lot more relevant now. I think if the Yankees went on the next 50 years and never win another ring, I think people would be happy about that because they hate the Yankees, but the hate would diminish. The hate diminishes each year they don't win and they can't play the heel. So this is good. This is good. I think this is a good World Series. I love it. It's also very emblematic of, in my opinion, the election. I'm like rooting for the Dodgers, but I'm not, you know, because I absolutely can't root for the Yankees ever. So I want the Dodgers to win, but I also don't really like the Dodgers. Kind of a lose-lose situation for a lot of people. There's a lot of parallels between this. But between, like, Ohtani, I don't dislike Ohtani. I wish he came to the Mariners, but he didn't do anything on the Angels that I can be mad at. And I really love Mookie Betts. And so I wouldn't be super mad if the Dodgers won, is what I'm trying to say here. But Juan Soto's up against Yamamoto right now, and he's setting Yamamoto up to go yard right here. Like, it's 2-2. He's fouled a couple off. Oh my god, he actually did. Oh, he did into the bullpen and right. Oh my god, I knew it. Jeez, he's so good. Can you believe there were Mariners fans who thought overpaying for him would have been a bad idea this offseason to trade for him? Are you kidding? It makes me so immensely sad that the Mariners have already took themselves out of the race for his free agency. Like, I don't think anyone expected them to give him what he wants, and it's probably going to be like 14 years, $600 million, something of that nature. But I'd like them to at least be in on it. They bragged about not meeting with anyone last year at the winter meetings, and I don't know why do they do that? Why? Why do they ever speak this organization? But wow, I can't believe that. And now you got Aaron Judge up after Soto. Can he follow up with anything at the plate? He's really just looked terrible up there. God, Soto is so good. All right, before I get too distracted by the World Series and God, Judge is just flailing at curveballs, let's look at what this team is retaining for next season at the very least. The Mariners, that is, I should say. Long pause. So if you're not familiar with how this process works, non-tendering and arbitration, that is, and Aaron Judge, weak flyout to right field. Fraud alert. This process of non-tendering and or arbitration, a guy who comes up in the major leagues and then logs 3 years of service time is eligible for arbitration. Some guys are eligible for 4 years, but the vast majority are eligible for 3 years of arbitration. And then after that, they hit free agency. So I think Logan Gilbert is a Super 2 arbitration guy, which means he has an extra year. I don't want to get into what that means, but all you need to know is he's on his second year of arbitration, and he will have 4 years of arbitration. Some players just do. They're Super 2. Look it up. I don't care to explain it. And if a team decides they don't want to pay or even go to arbitration, a lot of teams do just extend guys for a year before arbitration even comes up, just to get it out of the way and not go to arbitration. I think there can be bad blood from arbitration, to be honest with you. I think it's fine. But sometimes a guy is like lined up to make a lot of money in arbitration and they're just frankly not worth it at all. So a team can select to just not do that and non-tender him. And then they become a free agent and can sign wherever they want for however long they want. And looking at this list here for Mariners arbitration, there's some obvious ones. And there's quite a few non-obvious ones, but of their guaranteed contracts next season, so this is not ARB, they have Julio, who has that big contract. They got Luis Castillo still through 2027 with a vesting 2028 option. J.P. Crawford still retained next year through 2026. Mitch Garver has a $12.5 million on the books next season, and then a buyout after next year of a club option. Victor Robles, his newly minted contract, kicks in next year, and that's through 2026 with a 2027 club option. Dylan Moore has the last year of that little contract he signed, almost $4 million for next season. Then Andres Munoz has a $2.5 million contract through the end of next season with club options for the next 3 years. So that's a phenomenal looking contract just right now. So those are all the guys guaranteed to be back. Some of the arbitration is pretty guaranteed here, but then the two option decisions that are with this team right now, Mitch Haniger has a $15.5 million player option. No reason why he would turn that down at all. So I'm just assuming he's on the books for that heading into the free agency and trade part of this offseason. They're going to have to figure that out. And then Jorge Polanco has a club option for $12 million with a $750,000 buyout. I think they're probably going to deny this. I think there's totally reasons to accept it. I think, one, he was hurt all year and just got surgery, which is one way you can look at it. And then the other side of the coin there is he had a career worst year despite playing through injury, and now he's getting surgery on his knee, and there's just like an unknown of if he's ever going to come back and provide power like he used to, and like the Mariners probably expected them to this season. And then the obvious point of why I think they're going to not non-tender him, why they're just going to decline his option, is because it's $12 million. And to like most teams, if they think he's going to be above average next year, that's not terrible. Looking at the market where there's not going to be very many middle infielders available through free agency, second baseman at least, like you're not going to sign Willy Adames to play second base. And then through trade, there's Jonathan India probably is available. There's a couple other guys that could be available through trade for second base, but the market's pretty dry for second base at the moment. So that is the one reason why you could pick this up. It's opportunity cost. It's like, would you rather pay $12 million or take someone again off the scrap heap from free agency and hope they work out for less money? What I think they're just going to do is just play Ryan Bliss full time, starting second baseman next year. I'm not super against that if they address first and third base in meaningful ways. Because Ryan Bliss, I think, provides a decent floor. He looked pretty competent defensively. I think he's going to at least range better than injured Jorge Polanco did this year. Oh, my TV just cut out. What the hell? Dave Roberts was on my screen. Now it's black. What's going on? But if they address first and third base with meaningful offensive upgrades, hopefully, at least on paper, I'm fine with Ryan Bliss starting at second base. I think he can steal bases, he's really fast and plays solid defense, and if he's just like the 8 or 9 hole hitter, that's not a terrible option, especially on a friendly contract, which is league minimum. Ideally would give them more money to spend on the rest of the lineup and the team in general, so I think that is where I land with it. I'm not for or against keeping Polanco. I just don't think they're going to keep him at all, to be honest with you. So I think Mitch Haniger's on this team after these option deadlines, which I want to say are the same as the non-tender deadlines. And then Jorge Polanco, I think, will not be on the team. Maybe they decline it and try to re-sign him. If they really do think he's going to be better than he was this year and his knee was really hampering him and they think he's going to make a full recovery and all that, there's so much that we'll literally never know, probably, about that whole situation. But if internally they really do think he can be useful next season at second base and there's not a better alternative and they don't super believe in Ryan Bliss as a full-time guy, maybe they deny that club option with like the caveat of like, hey, we're going to try to bring you back for like 2 years at less money. Like maybe they bring him back for 2 years and the same amount of money, but just spread out over 2 years, like 2 years, $12 million. Maybe that's not enough. I don't know what his market would be in free agency, but also totally an option there. And now let's really get into it, why I'm doing this podcast. The non-tenders, it's as juicy as this non-tendering type of situation they've had in years. I can't even remember a time when there's this many tough decisions and obvious. There's so many obvious ones. So let's just get the obvious ones out of the way. And the ones with the most money. Let's just go most money down to start. So Randy Arozarena, he is up for arbitration. And this is his third year of arbitration. He's also one of those guys who's going to get 4 years, which is pretty nice. A Super 2 arbitration guy. He made $8 million last year. And the Mariners probably paid, what, $1 million of that? $1.5 million, $2 million, something like that, for the remainder of that year when they traded for him. And, oh, Teoscar Hernandez, 2-run dong shot off Carlos Rodon. I love it. I love to see Teoscar thriving. Oh, I'll say that too. I wouldn't mind a Dodgers World Series because Teoscar exists. So there's that. Wow, Rodon gave him a meatball right down the middle. Take it out the right center. Yeah, I don't think Teo out of the Seattle batter's eye purgatory is going to miss that one, and he did not. 3-1. Dodgers over the Yankees in the bottom of the third right now. Back to Randy Arozarena. He is going to make $11.5 million next year, which is the estimate. I'm going to say these all kind of in absolutes. It's according to MLB trade rumors. They actually think 11.7 is going to be Randy. I think I saw him earlier jotted down. I think it must have been Spotrac for 11.5. But third year of ARB, either if that's your last or your second to last, if you are even close to an all-star caliber player or a very much all-star caliber player like Randy, this is when that money takes a pretty big jump. And that's a good amount of money, but still not. That's still like a really good deal for Randy Arozarena. So $11.7 million. For him, Logan Gilbert is in his second arbitration year of 4. He was on a $4 million contract this year. After the year he's had, MLB trade rumors thinks he's going to make 8.1 through arbitration, which is a healthy estimate, definitely deserving of that. And then two guys who are hitting ARB for the first time now, Cal Raleigh and George Kirby at 5.6 and 5.5 respectively. So Those are your most money. Oh, Freddie Freeman just went yard. Frederick. Oh, my God. 4-1 Dodgers. Back to back. Dodger Stadium's going crazy. I live down here in Southern California, and the people the other night, I heard screams in my neighborhood around 10 seconds before Freddie hit that walk-off, so I knew something happened. Because my TV's a little behind. I don't watch cable. I do streaming through may or may not be legal ways, but I digress. I think the easy decision here, I think you just got a non-tender Logan and Randy, and that saves you almost $20 million. Easy savings. I think that'd be really good for all the owners and the ownership group. I think that puts a little bit of extra spending money in their pockets. Then I think you just kind of go with cheap alternatives to those. No, I'm just kidding. So those are all definites. Randy, Logan, Cal, and George, all of them 100% will go to arbitration or just agree to a contract prior and be on the team next year. That is not up for debate here. Those are the obvious decisions to go to ARB. The obvious decisions to non-tender, I think there's only one truly, truly obvious one, and it's Luis Urias for $5 million, because I think this is his last ARB year. Could totally have that twisted, but I think it is. And he's 100% getting non-tendered. There's no chance they keep him around for $5 million. So he's gone. And then the other two that I think are close to that are Sam Haggerty, which this will be his one of his early ARB years. He's up for $900,000 according to MLB trade rumors. That's his ARB estimate. I think the year he had was really unfortunate. Oh, Tommy Edman double. He has been killing it, man. He's just had a tough year and then got hurt. So he wouldn't even start the year healthy next year. I think for that reason, they probably just non-tender, and maybe they bring him back on a minor league deal because maybe the org just likes him and wants to keep him around. Like, I think he's a useful player to have in AAA. I think Samad Taylor and him kind of serve the same purpose, and maybe it's redundant to have them both on the same roster. But if you think Haggerty's going to recover okay from his injury, like, he can play every position and he's fast. Like, that is still kind of a valuable piece to have, but I don't think they're going to want to go to arbitration with him. I think they'll probably non-tender him. And then Austin Voth, I think, is the other one. A solid year out of the pen, like a fine year. Very, very useful, definitely helpful for this team in the pen, like, all season. He threw a lot of innings, and he's up for $2.2 million. This will be his last year of arbitration. I don't see the Seattle Mariners paying that or anything close to that for the production they got from him. And I think that is part of how you got to think about this as well, is just, I believe this org can find Austin Voth production from a guy either currently in the farm, like maybe just like Troy Taylor, like he's going to pitch a lot next season, or maybe they think they have more from some of their guys they have in the minors, or maybe they just sign a guy to the minimum off free agency, or like get a guy through the waiver wire and they think they can replace Voth's production with those guys. I don't disagree with them because they've shown they can do that. I think it's really hard to find a Andrés Muñoz, Matt Brash, Gregory Sand. Like, it's hard to find like a true 100% high leverage back of the bullpen guy. With a guy like Austin Voth, or even JT Chargois, who I'll talk about in a second, or Trent Thornton even, I'm pretty confident the Mariners can find a cheaper guy to do the same thing and be just as effective. This money is nothing to a serious baseball team if they wanted to keep these guys on the team. I will say that. It's a couple million dollars each. But that is a lot to ask from the Seattle Mariners, who are broke. They are broke. So, got to factor that one in here. So, I think they non-tender both, if I'm being honest. I think they non-tender both. 2.2 is just a lot to pay for what he gave them, you know? And then the other ones are just questionable. So you have the rest of the guys on here are Chargois, Thornton, Josh Rojas is an interesting one as well. And then Taylor Saucedo and Gabe Spire, your last two guys, the two lefties here. And it's I don't know. I don't know what the organization is going to do with these guys, to be honest with you. I think Rojas probably comes back. I think they keep Rojas on. I think it'd be worth it. $4.3 million is the estimate from trade rumors, and I think that's fair. I mean, he was more or less league average offensively most of the season with Gold Glove caliber defense at third base. I think I said in the episode a couple weeks ago, his best role, in my opinion, is hitting mostly against right-handed pitchers when they can, and backing up third base and second base and playing 100 games in a season, maybe appearing in like 130. But I don't think he should be starting more than like 110 on a serious baseball team right now going into 2025. I think he'd be a perfect, ideal second base, third base backup versus right-handed pitching. Something like that. And $4.3 million, I don't think they'd get – I think they'd pick that up and then potentially even include him in a trade. I don't think it'd be worth it to them to let him walk and then try to replace that at third base and get another big leaguer to either back up or start at second base, third base, where he could play. I think they'll keep Rojas. So then it's really just down to the remaining bullpen arms. Trent Thornton, I think, and I sung his praises a little bit in last week's episode just because he pitched so much. He was a workhorse out of this pen this year with just good output, like not amazing, not bad. For the amount of innings he pitched with his ERA and strikeout numbers, it was fine. It was a very good year, I thought, for him. But I think also factoring in like dollars per production, it's probably huge for the Mariners. I think it's huge for most teams to get the most out of what they're spending, but especially with teams who don't like to spend as much, you know, like the Mariners. And Trent this year made $1.2 million, and it's estimated around two is what his arbitration would be. 2.1 is what it's looking like on trade rumors. Similar to Voth, I don't know if the Mariners would ramp up to over two for him. I like him a little bit more than Voth, but I think he's probably subject to reliever volatility just based on what he does, and it's just Mr. Spin. He just spins stuff up there, lets the stuff play in the zone. I think they might non-tender him as well. I don't know. It depends on internally what they all think of these guys. In my mind, anything over two for a reliever in arbitration for the Mariners, they're just not going to pay unless their name is Matt Brash or Andres Munoz or something like that. So I don't know what they do with him. I would like to keep Trent Thornton. I think he's quite useful, but we'll see. And then Chargois, he was on 1.285 this year. The Mariners probably paid him nothing just with how salaries work. The remaining of that, they probably paid like a couple hundred thousand for the rest of the year. He is estimated for 1.7, so probably that 1.7 to 2-ish is probably what he'll get in arbitration if they choose to go to the arbitration with him. I think he's a more obvious non-tender than Thornton is. I think they probably rather keep Thornton than Chargois. I think Chargois and Voth are probably the top two non-tender bullpen arms from them. I think, again, you got to factor in the innings that they'll get from Troy Taylor next year. Ideally, Santos will be back healthy. Brash will come back hopefully sometime in June or July. And then there's always plenty of relievers to take a chance on for league minimum or like $1 million in free agency. And again, like I've said, I trust this org to kind of squeeze the most out of guys like that. They've proven that they can. And so I think, and Chargois, he was really solid just as kind of a throw-in acquisition deal. But I think he was really solid. I think he really was fine for this team and pitched a lot of innings that they needed. His peripherals did not look as pretty as his raw stats, which is the reason why I think they're just going to non-tender him. Wouldn't be surprised if they brought him back on like $1 million contract or something and just didn't want to go to arbitration with him. But I think that's the other one I would probably non-tender along with both for the right-handed arms of this pen. I think I'd keep Thornton for the price. That's me personally. And then probably non-tender Chargois on both. And then search in free agency or trade to fill those innings. Or even just look internally. I'll talk about prospects in my next episode. I think there's plenty of farmhands right now that have the potential to throw some meaningful innings in the pen next year. Some of them are starters. Like, will Logan Evans remain a starter? Converting him to a reliever did not work, apparently, in Double A this season at all. They bagged that idea shortly after they tried it. But a guy like Brandon Garcia or Michael Morales or Jimmy Joyce, are any of these guys going to go from higher volume minor league arms to lower volume major league bullpen pitchers? We'll see. We'll see. Could happen. And then the two lefties. Those are the only ones left here. So Saucedo and Spire, both up for ARP for the first time. Saucedo is looking at roughly $1 million. And Spire is looking at basically the same thing. Trade Rumors has him at $900,000, but that, you know, that go either way in arbitration. Spire just had a bad year. He was just hurt. I felt like he was never healthy because when he pitched, he looked terrible. His whiff, not his stuff didn't look too bad in my opinion. I haven't really looked at the stuff numbers, but the stuff when he pitched didn't look that bad. And the strikeouts were there, but the walks were way up. Like, he could not command anything he threw. I think he was probably pitching hurt the whole year when he wasn't on the IL. I think I'd hang on to Spire. I don't think I'd non-tender him. I think I would go to arbitration and give him, or just straight up say, hey, 1 year, $900,000 right now. Let's not go to arbitration. Let's lock in this offseason and get healthy. Because I think the stuff is still there. And what they got from him the previous year was so good. I want to believe there's still some of that in there. And for $900,000, like around $1 million, that's so cheap. That is so cheap. But I do think whichever one is not non-tendered, if they keep one, they're non-tendering the other one. So Saucedo, I think I'd non-tender him. It looks like he might be a little bit more expensive in arbitration, slightly. Maybe it's because he's been healthier and pitched more, and he's been pretty effective the past couple of years. Again, not an amazing relief pitcher, but a solid middle relief lefty arm, and he's funky. He serves that funk factor, and he's also, like, I want him on the team. He's a really cool dude. Like, he was live streaming when he was hurt this year, which was really fun. He's fun on social media. He's one of the younger guys. I really like him. I want him on the team just for that reason. But I think from a baseball standpoint, and I could be totally off base, I think I'd rather have Spire next year than Saucedo and then go try and acquire a higher leverage lefty from someone. Maybe like Garrett Clevenger from the Rays, like someone like that. And there's plenty of that out there. Or maybe just even go through to free agency and see if you can get a better lefty out of the pen that takes maybe, I mean, I think you need two lefties in the pen in this day and age, but that takes a little bit of the lefty onus off of Spire if they do hang on to him at all. So I think that's what I would do, but I don't know what they are going to do. I have no idea. It's hard to guess their next move as a team. They're very confusing. I think no matter what, Urias is non-tendered. And I think it's likely that Voth and Charcot are with him. And then I think between Thornton, Spire, and Sauce, I think they hold on two of those guys. Not all three. I think one of those guys is gone. I think Haggerty is probably gone. And then I think Rojas is back. And then obviously Randy, Cal, George, and Logan are all back for pretty significant sums of money for them. Good for them. And that has to be unfortunately factored into their free agency discussions with this team. So if they do buy out Polanco, that saves the $12 million. That's negated immediately by Mitch Garver's contract. And then you pack on 15.5 with Mitch Haniger's player option. You have a new contract for Victor Robles. And you have Castillo still makes a lot of money. Julio is going to start making more money. They're in a tough spot for them. They still have a relatively low payroll for what they should have. But adding in those ARB numbers, that's automatically a bump in payroll, I think, no matter what they do this offseason. I don't know how in the world they could possibly get off of Mitch Haniger's contract. The only way I can see that happening is if they do make a trade for a first baseman, second baseman, third baseman, what have you, and just attach what they would have given up without Haniger and then just throw in a top 10 prospect with Haniger to a team that can afford it. Or maybe it just balances out salaries. Like, you acquire a guy who's making roughly the same amount of money, throw in a prospect or two with Haniger. I don't know. I'm not confident that they can get rid of Mitch Haniger and get a competent player in return. Like, I'm really not. I don't think they can really do that. But that was a non-tendering experience from this episode. And then the free agents they lose is Jimmy Garcia and Justin Turner. I think they should bring back Justin Turner on a 1 year, whatever it is, $8 million, $9 million, $10 million, whatever it is, probably 10 or under. I think they bring him back. They should. Will they? I don't know. Carlos Santana was kind of a spiritual leader in 2022. And they didn't bring him back. And they missed the playoffs in 2023. It wasn't entirely about that. But I think for both fan service and clubhouse presence, this team clearly needed a Justin Turner type last season. I think there was a clear element missing from that locker room. And maybe that was partly a Scott Service problem. Maybe Dan Wilson would be better about, like, keeping the guys happy in the dugout and stuff. But guys like Carlos Santana and Justin Turner, even if they're not hitting, which Justin Turner absolutely did, but even if they're not, still can be so helpful. The amount of videos I saw of Justin Turner talking to Julio before games last season in September, that's got to be so helpful. That's got to be immensely helpful for a guy like Julio to have a 39-year-old guy who is been hitting well in Major League Baseball for almost as long as you've been alive. I think that's super helpful to have. So, I think it's cheap. A 1 year, $9 million deal for a veteran like that, even if he's going to be 40, if you have to release him in the middle of the year because he's that bad at the plate or something, you're losing like nothing. You're losing just a little bit of money next year. There's no long-term aspects to it at all. It's kind of a no-brainer, but they don't do those well. They don't do the no-brainers well, this organization. So I don't know what they do with that. I think they should just re-sign him. And then just looking at early, I've been thinking about trades because out of free agency, simultaneously, I don't think they're going to be in on too many of them because that, I mean, why should we expect them to be? But also a lot of these bats don't excite me a whole lot. There's unfortunately like plenty of first and third basemen available through free agency, but none that I'm really super excited about. Paul Goldschmidt, he's 37 and had a career worst year. I'm kind of cooling on that. Pete Alonso, too. The warning signs are there. I think it's a very risky signing. Free agency inherently is risky, but I think that's more risky than most. Like, Anthony Rizzo is 35. Josh Bell is not good. Who else is available? Third base. Yeah, and then the other one, like Bregman, will probably make a good amount of money this year, but I also think there's plenty of warning signs that I saw this year from Bregman that don't make me encouraged for next year. I think his bat would play fine at T-Mobile. It's a little bit better for a guy like that than a lefty of the same makeup. But Bregman is made for the Crawford boxes. He's never had a ton of pop, but he is made to farm home runs from the Crawford boxes. He's still elite and not striking out. He still will get on base at a great clip. He will play great third base defense. I think that alone is enough for the Mariners to approach him with a contract. But I think there's plenty of reasons to not sign him. That being said, I even think an aging Paul Goldschmidt would be better at first base right now than what they have. Like, I don't know what Tyler Locklear is. I don't know. I think Jerry DePoto is probably frothing at the mouth with the amount of trades that he is going through in his mind. He hasn't had this much prospect trade capital since he's been with the Mariners. And I think he's going to use some of that this winter. I think they'd be dumb not to. The big question is, do they trade a starter? I'm in the camp that yes, as much as I love Logan Gilbert, I think trading him would make baseball sense. It would suck that they would have to do that. Because what they should do is give Juan Soto $1 billion for 20 years to play for the Mariners. They're not going to do that. They should. And if they're not going to do that, Logan or either of Wu or Miller or even Kirby, Castillo probably has the least value just because of his contract and his age. You could get something nice back for Logan Gilbert. The cogs are going through my head right now because Castillo might on paper have the worst value. He makes the most money. He is the oldest and aging. But maybe you just don't get a premier bat from that. Maybe you get a high paid bat that's still effective. That's kind of just like a swap for Castillo, who's also still an effective starter, but aging. I don't know. Running a baseball team seems difficult, especially if you're not really allowed to spend a whole lot of money. Like Cody Bellinger will probably make a good amount of money, but I don't think the Mariners are going to be able to pay him because I think he's going to get paid as a center fielder, and the Mariners don't need that. The Mariners would want him as a first baseman, but he's going to want to get paid as a center fielder, and I think he should get paid as a center fielder. But there are a lot of like first base, third base trades that could happen. The Cardinals just said they're open to trading Arenado this offseason. Similar to my concerns about like the other guys like Alonso and Bregman in terms of the warning signs of aging are there. But what you get from him defensively is basically the same thing you got from Rojas last year. And I think the offensive floor is higher. Despite him having a couple rough offensive years. I think like Ryan Mountcastle could be available from the Orioles. I think an Orioles trade for a starting pitcher, like starting pitcher goes to the Orioles and bat comes back to the Mariners, whether it's Mountcastle or Kobe Mayo. I think Mountcastle is more likely to move. That is certainly a thing. I think Josh Naylor is a name I've seen thrown around because he's just making a good amount of money and the Guardians obviously don't want to pay that. I think it's like $9 million. I don't know if his profile is the best for the Mariners, but I think again he'd be better than the alternative. I don't know. They're in a good and bad spot. If they're really this limited with money and free agency, again, like they still have so much prospect capital to trade from, they just have to trade from it. Because I don't know what they're going to get from any of these top prospects next season in the major leagues, and your starting pitching core and your core like Julio and Cal are only getting more and more expensive as the years go by, exponentially expensive. And a lot of these top prospects might not make any meaningful contributions to winning baseball games in Seattle until 2026, maybe even 2027 for a decent amount of these guys. Can they wait that long? I don't know if they can. So I don't know. I don't know what they do, but I'm wrapping this one up now. That was the non-tendering, the tenderizing episode. That was my take on what they should do in the non-tender situations. I'm still on my couch. I'm still watching the World Series. The Dodgers are still winning. And I will be back soon with a minor league podcast. I'm not going to do a minor league team of the year like I've done the past couple of years. I'm just going to do something different. I'm going to do just kind of a down on the farm overview, health check of what the farm's looking like, and then who we could see next year, who we're likely to see, who we probably shouldn't see next year, and just talk a little bit about who I like, who I don't like on the farm, with the obvious caveat that some of those guys could be on a different team come the start of 2025. So we'll see. And then the non-tender deadline is, when is that pesky deadline? November 17th, 2024. Yeah, so it's a Friday. So that is when we'll know for sure who is non-tendered and who is going to arbitration. I will revisit what I talked about here when that deadline passes just to see what they end up doing, and that's going to give us more of an idea of the shape of the offseason for this team. But I think we'll probably be a little disappointed with the amount of spending. That's a given. And the questions I asked in this episode will hopefully be addressed in the offseason, but we'll see. Either way, next podcast, unless something huge happens with this team, next podcast I will have will be down on the farm check-in, and then we'll go from there into the off-season. But I appreciate you listening to this somewhat unorthodox episode of the Chaos Ball podcast while I give you some live updates of a game you already know the outcome to, because this doesn't come out until tomorrow, Sunday for you. So I hope the Dodgers end up winning this game, but we'll see. Either way, I'm not going to say go Dodgers to end this episode. I'm going to say go Mariners. Go arbitration the hell out of some of these players. Get these guys paid. Thank you for listening. Hope you have a great rest of your week. Goodbye.